Dr. Lark, welcome. Thank you for joining us. Okay, anybody does not have a copy of the agenda or the treasurer's report? Indeed. All right. Call to order. Credentials report. Dr. Glazer.
Okay, if I missed you, I know these are people I've noted here as being on the Central Committee. Eric Rich, Robert Glazer, McManus, James Harris, Robert Johnson, Jack Jones, John King, Michael Lindbergh, Doug McNeil, Sean Quinn, Colleen Quinn, Stuart Sin, Scott Spencer, Tony Cezia, David Sin, Lee Zemowski. Did I miss anybody?
Jason Wonder.
Anybody else whose name is not called?
Okay, we have 17 Central Committee members present plus one proxy. There's currently 29 on the roll.
Very good, thank you. The minutes of the last Central Committee meeting, which I believe were the picnic at Dave Stentz, is that correct? Were included in one of the recent newsletters. Are there any corrections, adjustments, or questions about them? Hearing none, the minutes are so passed. The Treasurer's Report, Mr. Linder. Treasurer's Report on the back of the agenda.
Yes, okay. Everyone has copies. I don't know if you had a few minutes to digest it. It's basically last 20. At 7th, we had a picnic, so it was a committee meeting, but the picnic, that's where it came from. I cut it off 3 days ago, so I'm sure we can read. I don't know if it's verbatim, but it's a request of basically $3,893 in income instead of $2,903. So,
does anyone have any questions for the treasurer? Very good. Hearing none, the report is so moved. The chair's report. Okay, as the recent membership voter registration report just came out this week, we are at 15,324. We are the only party in the state that has been growing, what, in the last 2 years, 3 years? Only party in 2 years plus unaffiliated voters. The membership is at 72. The membership numbers have been a frustrating bone of a contention with us. We have been working hard trying to reach out and get more new members. This is not just a problem for our state party. I've spoken with other state chairs who have had that problem, and nationally with the party also. We, as well as our candidates polled last year, we had six candidates statewide, nationwide polling in the double digits, the best we probably ever have done with polling, yet we really didn't get much of a bounce in membership or money. I'm sure there's several reasons for that, but that has been one issue of contention. We are currently working now with Delegate David Moon of Tacoma Park on a ballot access bill. Currently, we are a recognized party. Our presidential candidate in 2016 must get at least 1% of the vote for us to maintain our ballot access. Gary Johnson did get 1.1% in 2012. If we don't get the 1%, then we will have to go back to the god-awful petitioning, what we were just talking about with Mr. Sarvis. We would need 10,000 signatures. Excuse me. Having said that, we are working on a ballot access bill, HB 626. I would like to introduce Eric Blitz, our vice chair, who has been working on it with more detail.
Okay, so just so you know what the bill does, there's two ways that the party can maintain ballot access. One is to get 1%, as I've just talked about, in the highest office for every 2 years, or 1% of the registered voters. And that's approximately 38,000 right now, somewhere in that range. We're at 15,003. The bill would replace the 1% with a flat 10,000. This is the same bill that I described last year. The big change this year is we have a delegate, a freshman delegate, a Delegate Moon, who is an enthusiastic supporter rather than just putting it in for the benefit of a constituent, as happened last year at the Senate. We had a fantastic hearing before the House Ways and Means Committee. The whole committee, almost the whole committee, was engaged, and interested in the subject. There were, unlike last year, which there were naysayers, some of whom just don't like the Libertarian Party, but some of whom just couldn't imagine why you would not want to be part of their party. You know, that was the kind of argument we get. This time they were very interested in the substantive question of why do we say that if you lose your party status and get 10,000 petition signatures when the party already has 10,000 qualified registered voters who have affiliated with that party. And my main argument at the hearing was that that's a better standard upon which you can evaluate the level of commitment in the state for a minimum ballot access. We don't know whether it will get out of committee this year. It was always going to be a long shot. Just so you know, if it doesn't get out of committee, it doesn't go anywhere. It has to get a favorable report from the committee. Otherwise, you'd have to have some sort of push from the governor's office or the leader of the House or Senate to actually get out of that committee. So we are cautiously optimistic, but this is a long-term prospect. The last time,
I worked with Doug and Scott Becker on ballot access in the 90s.
Right.
It was a 5-year process.
It was a 5-year process, so I'm committed to go there every as long as it takes until we can get that 10,000, because once we do that, ballot access is no longer a problem in Maryland at all. And if Delegate Moon told me by email that if they do get a favorable report, he's willing to go wrangle up a senator to put it to cross file it in the Senate. And then we have a Senate hearing. If that occurs, the word will go out that we'll need some more people besides me to show some more grassroots support, because unlike in the House where we had a friendly hearing, in the Senate we would have a less than friendly hearing, so we want more of a grassroots support to let them know that regular people are interested in the topic and that maybe we can move it forward. But, we'll just keep on trying year after year.
Well, while you're up, Eric, Tony, you had a question?
I did have a question. Okay. Which committees in both the House and the Senate would hear this?
Ways and Means in the House.
And in the Senate, it's Education, something, Environment, which is the broad thing.
Education, Health, and Environment.
Yeah.
Okay.
They handle all the elections. Wherever the assignments for election law articles are, and that's where it was.
Yeah, I myself have been monitoring this and numerous other topics.
All I have besides Delegate Moon, there is a delegate from District 46. I believe her name is Brooke Cullison.
Learman.
Brooke Learman, I am sorry.
She's a co-sponsor of this bill, and so is Lee Smith Jr., who's a friend of David Moon. He's also from Montgomery County. He might also be a freshman. That I should know, but I don't. He's young, so I imagine he may be a freshman as well. But they came up together in the blogosphere talking about Democratic politics.
Do you know of any other folks that are with us on this?
Senator Ferguson would likely be.
Okay.
He introduced the bill last year.
Yes.
But we probably actually would want a different senator to be the main sponsor if we do get a Senate sponsor.
But so those are the four main people that we're dealing with at this time?
We're really only dealing with David. We're letting David shepherd it through.
Okay.
David, as a freshman, was showing up at a committee hearing with a lot of veterans, and they all liked him so much, and this is across the aisle, that they were all willing to participate in a practical joke on him at the start of the hearing. And they all thought it was the funniest thing in the world. It wasn't really that funny, but they were saying they were all had a question about the bill. So, but that shows that he's got that kind of camaraderie that works well.
Yeah. By the way, I spoke with Brooke Learman earlier in the session, and She said she was behind us 100%. All right.
Thank you. While you're up, Eric, Eric has also worked in Annapolis with the General Assembly on marijuana legislation. If you could speak that up briefly.
Yeah. As most of you know, the Libertarian Party of Maryland is part of the coalition that is putting forth a number of bills on marijuana issues. We were successful in 2014 with a decriminalization bill that decriminalized possession of under 10 grams. That's not a whole lot. In fact, that's the lowest of the amounts in the nation, I believe, for the decrim. But our main goal is a legalization bill. It's not the purest libertarian exercise in legislation. It deals with taxation and regulation and things like that, but that's what you're going to get in a progressive state. It is modeled essentially after the Colorado legislation, and I think that's actually a pretty good basis for leaving a criminalized market and moving to a free market economic structure. The problem with decriminalization is it only deals with possession, doesn't deal with the distribution and production side, which actually contributes about 80% of the problem of the drug war. So you really need legalization. We have three main bills this year. The legalization, which we've had a hearing on in both houses. It went very well in one and very poorly before the kind of our nemesis is Chairman Valerio. He's absolutely against legalization. It's probably not going to get anywhere this year, but it's just like we were talking about the ballot access. You have to come back year after year after year, build momentum. 2016 is going to be is projected to be the big year for legalization across the nation. California is probably going to have a 2016 referendum on it, or even a legislative response. There's other states that are moving. They'll want to leverage the presidential cycle where people are paying more attention to politics. So we're doing that. We also had a decriminalization fix bill, which fixed the 2014 legislation by adding paraphernalia, because that was left out in part because of the way it happened. For those of you that attended last year's convention, while we were sitting here, that's when it actually moved onto the floor in a very elaborate, well, an arcane mechanism to pull it away from a committee chair who was against the decrim. And got it passed, but it left paraphernalia. There's also a bill that addresses decriminalization by raising the amount. Currently, it sets no limit, no possession amount. That's very unlikely to pass. That bill was likely to pass, but that amount was very unlikely. Probably the 7.1. The police are absolutely against paying kind of a complete blanket decriminalization for problems associated with possession with the intent to distribute other crimes. There are three other companion bills that we testified on. One dealt with expungement, so that people who had previously been convicted an amount that is now decriminalized, or should in the future it becomes legalized, these people could get their records expunged. And that's all part of the problem on the criminal justice side, where you have individuals who have problems getting jobs or other, even getting into public education facilities if they've got that criminal record. So those expungements are important. And there's also a bill that helps with parole and probation, similarly along those
lines. Tony, you had a question?
I wanted to bring up another aspect. I did drop by Senator Ferguson's office on the ballot access issue and discovered that because he is now on another committee that he wasn't devoting at the time to the ballot access issue. Now, my guess is that, first of all, can we get a list together of people? And I surmise who may be on our side and who is not, but I don't know for sure. But I think that that's something that we might want to
work with. See, we do that we have quite an elaborate system for marijuana because we want grassroots support for marijuana. Unlikely it's going to get there this year, so we may need to do a more public outreach next year, but we'll see.
Any other questions for Mr. Blitz?
Just a point of information. I got invited on the 27th in Annapolis to the Women for Marijuana Reform in Maryland. So if you give me all those bills and everything, maybe I can pass that outline there and see if we can get them behind us, because they seem to be pro-marijuana. And it's like $50 tickets. Anybody wants to go, just send me an email and I'll give you the information. The more people I have with me, the better it is. But
we
can kind of get, like how we've been doing with other things, get other organizations on board with us to push the issue. And since this is our issue, marijuana, it'd be a good way to get in there.
Those of you who are thinking about running for in 2016 as a candidate, we've got to make this ours and get the credit for it. We've been carrying this banner for 40 years, and we can't let either of the other two parties beat us to the punch on this one. No question about it. Any other questions for Mr. Blitz? Firstly, I want to thank Eric for all he's done. He has busted his butt going up and down I-97 to Annapolis regularly, and it's been great for the party. There will be candidates up in 2016, 8 U.S. House seats, 1 U.S. Senate seat, I believe 3 citywide seats, and the 14 councilmanic districts in the city. One of the few benefits of being a non-establishment party in Maryland is we have a very late filing deadline next year, July 1st. To file your declaration of intent, and the rest of the paperwork must be in on August the 1st. The Democrats and Republicans have to file by January the 13th, or they're out of luck. So that is one good thing. We do have time. I have potentially candidates for half the U.S. House races, the U.S. Senate race, and a couple of the city council seats. It would be great to run a full slate for all these races. If you're thinking about running, please contact me, come see me today, shoot me an email or whatever. I'll tell you exactly what you need to do to get on the ballot. You don't need to make a decision today, but if you're just something you're thinking about, my main thing is at least getting someone on the ballot so we have as many seats occupied, and then take it to the level of comfort and the time and the energy that you have. The 2016 National Party Convention will be in Orlando next year. Is it the last week in May, Dr. Lark? I believe it is. It's going to be around in late May. We will probably have about 21 delegates able to go. Those delegates will be elected at our state party convention next year, but it's something to start thinking about if you are planning on going down. We had several candidates who are here who ran in 2016 that really did a great job. Scott Soffin had his signs out in fantastic locations, especially the Deerco and Timonium Road location. I don't know how you got there and beat the other candidates to the punch. Sean Quinn busted his butt. He worked harder than any Maryland Libertarian candidate I've ever seen. How many miles did you drive?
I can't tell you. I put over 100,000 miles
in my truck. Exactly. He lives down there right near the Solomon's Island Bridge, which is parallel to Fredericksburg, Virginia. I mean, it's an hour south of Annapolis. It's far from everywhere in the state. And he and Colleen really busted their butt and did a great job. Leo Domowski ran, I thought, probably the best, had the best platform of a candidate I've ever seen. It was hardcore. People understood it and really got the attention of the media with his platform. Plus, because of his job in Office of Parole and Probation, he could speak truth to power and what's really going on. I mean, even the Baltimore Sun gave us some positive articles last year. So we are definitely getting on the radar. If you guys would like, if you want to come up and speak for a minute or two about your candidacy.
I'm feeling so important these days.
Well, you are.
First off, Ed, thank you for coming to speak with us today. You are kind of like my inspiration.
I mean, I saw what you did in Virginia, and I was hoping you had a springboard to advance. I mean, I think I was even in contact with your campaign manager a couple times about what could I do to help you in Virginia. And I had a lot of people down in Southern Virginia that were helping you and voting for you. So thank you so much for inspiring me and then coming and talking to us today. And Doc, what can I say? You've been everywhere.
But the big thing was we wanted to start early. And, I mean, Bob can tell you, I was probably the biggest thorn in his side. I was like, Bob, we got to get a candidate. Bob, we got to get a candidate. We got to have a meeting. We haven't had a nomination. Can't give these guys free time at all. And so we actually ran for a whole year. I mean, we were running all through the primary. And, I mean, and you can ask the Democratic candidates. They didn't go anywhere where they didn't see me. And then you ask the Republicans that showed up. They were the same way. They're like, God, who keeps inviting this guy? And it got to the point that in the primaries that Hogan wouldn't even show up if I was going to be there. He would send Rutherford any time I was going to be there because he didn't want to answer questions. So we saw Hogan a whole matter of twice during the whole election cycle and Rutherford every other time. So it was really interesting, and a lot of people in here helped me. I mean, and I can't even... Eric, my God, Eric, is there anything you don't do for this party? I mean, he's there for everything. I mean, we had meetings. I mean, Scott, how many things did you show up with me for? I mean, Tony, you know, even you were like just lackluster for a while, and then all of a sudden you turned in Mr. Campaign Man. So the first and most important thing I have to say is thank you all. But we still need to build this party. Our party is just way too small, and it's just too hard for candidates to do everything by themselves. We need people in every single county running things so that the candidates can just show up and do their thing and then go back and do what they have to do to get elected. Because you can't win by yourself. I'll tell you, I put 100,000 miles in my truck. I left our national convention and came back to Frederick and then went back to the convention to finish the convention. You just can't see enough people one-on-one if you're doing it all by yourself. It just can't happen. There's just too many people in the state. There's over 2 million Democrats alone that are on the poll. There's 975,000 Republicans. You can't shake that many hands. And I tried. It's just impossible. Leo, my God, how many places did we go together? And if I couldn't show up, Leo show up and you do my thing. And if Leo couldn't show up, I had his stuff and I'd pass it out. And that's what we have to do. We have to work together. We have to grow the party. And we need to get these individual communities having people run the communities. Because once we do, there's no stopping us. Because when people actually shake our hands and talk to us, they're like, my God, these are the people we want in office. But you can't see them all. As far as the meetings go, just don't even pay attention to meetings. They have one thing and one thing on their mind, keeping control of the power. They don't have any facts, and they will say whatever it takes. And when they can't argue facts anymore, they call you names. So if somebody starts calling you names, you know they're a minion. You're not going to switch them over to anything. So just ignore them and move on to another person. Other than that, thanks for everything. I hope we can do this again in 2018. I'll be asking for your nomination again. I just don't know who my lieutenant governor is going to be yet, because I think Lorenzo might run for governor of, or I mean, mayor of Baltimore.
He just walked in.
Oh, he is? He is? Oh, yeah, right.
Went down the hallway or whatever.
Right. So if Lorenzo's running in 2016 for mayor, you're going to find me everywhere Lorenzo's at, because I'm going to do everything I can to help him get in, because that would be such a kick in the butt to have the mayor of Baltimore pushing a libertarian candidate for governor. So we'll get him in. So the seat is open for lieutenant governor. So if you're interested, let me know. If you're a gas dog, it would be easier because we can just reuse our signs. Thanks again.
Thank you, Chuck. This is Zanowski.
When I ran for attorney general, I really thought that there would be no Republican candidate. That's the main reason I ran. Then 2 days before the filing deadline, a Republican filed. And the dispiriting thing was, it showed how people are so tied to their party. Because I was at some event 2 years ago. I ran for Congress and did everything we could and wound up getting 3%. And in this last election, in that same congressional district, some guy who had just graduated from college, and his main campaign theme was that he had taken political science in college, ran against Ruppersberger and got like 35%. So, I mean, people are just so tied to that party. In the attorney general's race, the Republican candidate literally spent no money and did absolutely nothing. I would joke, we were in the ghetto one day. It was a helicopter flying overhead. We were at some church, and the Republican was supposed to be there, and he didn't show up, of course. I said, I think they're looking for that Republican candidate. But the people are just so tied to that party. So we have a tough thing, but the way we do it is with our ideas. Like, I focused on one thing, the drug war, and it got a lot of attention, and it's like Bob says, we can't let the Republicans steal that issue from us, because now both nationally and locally, the Republicans are talking more about decriminalization than Democrats are. So I could see them hopping on board and taking credit for it and taking it right out of our hands. So we have to make sure that people know that that is our issue. I mean, that was when everything I put out, the bumper stickers and the drug war, libertarians, we got to just continue to get out the messages because it draws people from both parties. And people who ordinarily could care less understood the connection. And it was a fun campaign in that sense. Afterwards, it's rewarding when people contact you and say that, you know, I voted for you and you were the one candidate that made it worthwhile to vote. It touches you. But we just have to grow larger because at this point in the state, the only thing the party can give you is a place on the ballot, really. They can't give you money or volunteers. And hopefully we'll reach a point where we can turn some of that around a little bit with volunteers and money. But until then, we just have to focus on that message and get out there. And there's some people that really work hard. My wife was incredible. It's difficult when you're in a race you think you can win, but when you're in a race where you hope to get 4% or 5%, it's easy, you know, a lot of people think, why are you wasting your time? But she stood by me and thought that the message was important. And that's one reason I love the Libertarian Party. It's not just the message. But if you go to a Democrat or Republican caucus or convention, deep down everybody's worried about the job they could get after the party wins or how they can further themselves personally in some way. And I was at CPAC a few weeks ago, and the Maryland Republican Party was there, and that's all they were talking about. Whereas these people here know we're not going to win anything anytime soon. We're doing it because we love freedom, and this is what America is all about. This is how this country was formed, because people put their lives on the line. And I just love you guys, and keep it up.
And we love you. Okay.
So, the only comment I would add is I also feel as though I had no chance to win. I was at, I'm Scott Soffin, and I was running an Elijah Cummings district for Congress, and Elijah Cummings won the election with 75% of the vote. So there's really no chance the Republican he was running. So what I did with my campaign was instead of trying to get people to vote for Scott Soffin, who is a transient figure in the world, I really emphasize the Libertarian Party. So I tried to go out and represent the Libertarian Party's point of view. I tried to get people to vote for the Libertarian Party. So there's an emphasis on the party rather than the individual, which will hopefully have longer term, long legs, if you will, as the next candidate comes after me, or if people are passing through my county and saw my signs, again, they emphasize party instead of my name. And that, again, hopefully helps candidates in other districts or running for other offices beyond myself.
And your interview on Channel 2 was great. It was one of the best I've seen. It was
Thank
excellent.
You.
Indeed. Thanks again. I would now like to invite our esteemed regional rep, Dr. Jim Lark.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you again for allowing me the honor to serve as the regional rep, and to thank you for the great work that you've done. I'm constantly amazed that what you've been able to accomplish in the state of Maryland. Some of you may know that I've never regarded Maryland fondly as a state.
Not alone.
And I think that the progress that you have made in terms of standing up for liberty, showing people that there is a voice for liberty in the political marketplace, is tremendous. And so I thank you for the tremendous work that you've done. Just a very quick regional report. The biggest concern that I have right now is that we have seen, somewhat surprisingly, a non-trivial membership drop. We've gone down ballpark about 2,000 or so members since the national convention, and this has come even though we had many fine candidates around the country. We had excellent candidates in many, many states, in some cases where we haven't had candidates before. We've seen successes from state parties in places we've never really seen success before. In Virginia, for example, we had 7 congressional candidates. We've never had anywhere near that many. We had a very good candidate for the United States Senate, and yet we saw a membership decrease. Now, to some extent, a little bit of that can be explained by the fact that you usually have a bump in advance of national conventions. Coming into 2014, many state parties wanted to beef up their numbers because they wanted more delegates for the national convention. One state in particular did a particularly good job of bumping up their numbers, the state of Ohio. So a little bit of the bump is understandable, but why we've seen the decrease, I'm not sure. Frankly, I'm concerned about it. I don't think it's ultimately going to be a big problem, but it is worrisome, because when you see success on the part of many state parties in putting forward good candidates who articulate the message and articulate it well, and then you don't see that translate into increased numbers, it's a little concerning. I will point out, by the way, and I think that I've always felt libertarians are probably the harshest critics of themselves. Now, to some extent, we want to be harsh critics of ourselves. We always should be subjecting ourselves to scrutiny. But I think in some cases we're unduly harsh because we don't realize, perhaps we don't notice, the many signs of success that we're seeing. I had the honor of speaking at the International Students for Liberty Conference in Washington, D.C. about a month ago. And if you see the myriad libertarian organizations that are represented at these events, many of the people who are running these organizations started these organizations. They were involved in Libertarian Party activities. They cut their teeth in Libertarian Party activities. Many of the people in attendance first heard about the Libertarian perspective, not through books, not through pamphlets, but through Libertarian campaigns. And so in many ways, I think part of the reason it's been difficult for us to gain membership is that in some ways we're victims of success. And, by the way, I want this victimhood to continue, because many of these organizations are doing wonderful work, and they are now competing in the marketplace of donations, of volunteership with us. They're very effective organizations, and since libertarians, by and large, don't like politics, I think that it's not really surprising that sometimes we have difficulty with membership, and that other organizations, which are nonpartisan, which, by the way, young people seem to be particularly averse to being involved with partisan organizations, I think that sometimes we don't give ourselves credit for how much good work we've done in actually building the libertarian movement that we're now seeing. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens. 2015, of course, we don't have that many elections going on nationally. The Commonwealth of Virginia, my home state, of course, we have elections every year. We look forward to the politicians getting on TV and insulting our intelligence the way they do. So 2015, I think, of course, we're trying to ramp up in terms of our outreach efforts, in terms of reaching out to communities that have not been reached out to as much as we would like. Young people, people who tend to get their heads beaten in by the police, we have to do a better job of reaching out to them. What's going on for 2016, I don't know. I have not seen anyone new step forward who is interested in seeking our presidential nomination. There's, of course, talk about Governor Johnson wanting to do it again. I don't know if we're going to have any excitement. If there's anyone out there on the horizon who is new and really exciting, I don't know about it. I do hope that we will see, again, a nice representation from Maryland. I was very pleased to see how many people from Maryland were there last time. Of course, I wish you were actually able to participate in these things, but now that you're actually a hired hand at national, you have to stay out of the internal politics. Let me ask, are there any questions that I can answer? I mean, right now, we're in some ways in a little bit of a lull. This is sort of that period that we're starting into the upswing into the presidential election year. And so we're right now at sort of a lull. So I guess the best thing to do is ask, are there questions that I can answer? Yes, sir.
I know we're concerned about the clock. But I think that most Americans, and I think most voters of America, don't comprehend the idea of being a member of the party. They understand being registered with a party, but not being a member. And I think that this is where we're at. And I don't think this is particularly bad at all, because actually we've got record registrations, but we've dropped membership.
Yes.
But, so I don't think this is bad. I think what we need to do in terms of money, if you register libertarian, then we can actually take a place and say, hey, you're registered libertarian, donate so that we can stay alive and we can register again. This is what I'm saying. It's very simplistic, I agree.
It's not, my distinguished colleague, Mr. Gastanaga, is not at all simplistic. And in fact, there are many people. Ultimately, if you ask me, would I rather have a large party that is not particularly active or a smaller party that has great people going out and doing great work, I'd opt for the latter. I think most people would. Membership is an index, it's a metric, that provides us with some useful information. You're absolutely right. I think most people don't look at membership the way they look at registration. And in fact, I would say people of libertarian disposition are particularly inclined not to think of membership. One point, if I may, let me digress. It's not a big digression. One of the things that I've been keen on for many years, as you probably know, is building libertarian groups on college campuses. It is now very easy, actually, to build libertarian groups that are nonpartisan. We find a lot of interest in young people in the libertarian ideas. It is very hard to build partisan libertarian organizations on college campuses. And I think particularly for libertarian young people, they look at partisanship, they look at partisan political activity as the hair of the dog that bites. They look at issue politics as being something, yes, they get involved with the specific issue politics. They like talking about the philosophy. But getting people, particularly young people, particularly libertarian young people, to actually sign on the dotted line has been very, very difficult. And I think the point that you're making about people looking at registration as opposed to membership is a very good one. I have never looked at membership as the main metric for us. But it's certainly something, when we see a drop after what I think was a very good year in terms of candidates, I think that we should at least pay attention to that. I think we ought to at least see if there's some reason for this that we're missing. Yes.
I agree that we should pay attention. We should pay attention to everything that affects the work of liberty. Completely agree. Now, I think that we need to look at the fact that we became a party. I think we became a party. I'm not inside the head of the folks that put the party together, but I think we became a party because in order to advance political ideas, we were offered, the people that wanted liberty were offered the means of becoming a party as the way to become a party, to achieve liberty. So that's what you're given. That's the cards you're dealt, and therefore you jump into it, and you're right in doing it. However, I think there's a shift. I actually think that the whole political system in this country is completely going to break down. I don't know if I'll see it in my lifetime, but it's breaking down. And in the end, it's not going to be about political parties other than political associations. That's what I think, and that actually, in a way, is closer to the libertarian ideal than what we got right now.
Well, again,
and I think we may be, the young people may actually be moving in that direction, and we got to figure out how we can.
I think the young people are moving in that direction, and again, when you talk to, you know, again, I'm at the point now where used to be when I started working with Students for Individual Liberty, I was like the big brother of the young people with whom I've been. Now, I'm their grandfather. and that changes the dynamic rather significantly. I think that, again, the point is basically correct. I think that young people, particularly libertarian young people, are much more inclined to look at things not as we need to be involved in a partisan political effort, but we need to be involved in promoting ideas. We need to be involved in promoting community. And we need to be involved in promoting specific issues. And we are trying to take advantage of that. There are many ways in which partisan political organizations can actually facilitate nonpartisan efforts. And actually, I think we did one thing that I've been very pleased with, the work that we've done with Students for Liberty, We actually have a very good relationship with them. Perhaps it's not hurt by the fact that I'm on their board of advisors. We've actually managed to let them do an awful lot of spade work for us in terms of promoting the ideas on college campuses, to let them do some of the heavy lifting for us without our compromising their 501c3 status. Mm-hmm. We've achieved a very nice balance. And again, I tend to be very optimistic. When you look at the extent to which young people increasingly are starting to identify themselves, if not using the label, they are clearly starting to identify with the libertarian position on many issues. If you look at the extent to which progressives are starting to poop their pants at how they see young people who they think should be progressive, who are now moving in our direction.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you, John Judas, for example, recently came out and said his previous work was wrong. He thought that there was this coming progressive generation. Doesn't look like that now. Now, he's not ready to say that they're all going to become libertarians, but there are many people who thought the demographic shifts were going to favor progressives. They're starting to rethink that. They're starting to say, wait a minute, these young people, these millennials in particular, they're not behaving the way we thought they were, and they're starting to see the data that suggests perhaps they are, much to their chagrin, much more libertarian than we would like. Now, ultimately, I don't find this surprising. Why? Because libertarian ideas, frankly, are just better ideas. People who embrace these ideas, people who understand the ideas of liberty and responsibility, they understand a libertarian society, while not perfect, is likely to be a much better society than what we now have. And I think a lot of young people, they now look at the libertarian perspective. They may not call themselves libertarians, but increasingly they're starting to embrace these ideas. And I think that when they actually, if they do decide to step into a voting booth, I think to a greater extent down the line, they're going to be willing to at least consider libertarian. I'll take a few more. I don't want to take up all of Chairman Johnston's time, but I'll be happy. Are there any other questions? By the way, I'm going to be sticking around at least for a while so I can watch some basketball.
I'll make a comment. I think at the end of the day, libertarian ideas provide a vehicle for persuasion rather than coercion. You can have people who are atheists, you can have people who are believers like myself, right? Now, how can you live together? How can you even, I mean, do you want to have a forced atheist or a forced believer? No, you don't, not if you have any smarts. You want to convince one or the other to be that way. Libertarian approach provides that. And I think young people are getting very savvy to that and are rejecting the forces that the political correctness of now and the political correctness of before. Political correctness is not new.
No, I should ask for an amen for Brother Gastoniani. Because one of the things I think perhaps even libertarians don't appreciate is the extent to which a libertarian perspective put into practice allows enormous diversity.
Yes.
Real diversity.
Yes.
And real community.
Yes.
You can have communities that have completely different ideas about how they should organize. You can have the worst stereotype of dog-eat-dog capitalism on this side of the river, complete communism on this side of the river. As long as there is a basic agreement on what's thine and what's mine, real property, this is yours, this is mine, you can have extraordinary diversity. You can allow people to seek their own God, their own utopia, as long as they don't force people to participate. It's a wonderful range. And I think your point about young people is very much so. Libertarian, the term libertarian, has undergone an informal, there's been a branding that's taken place, informally, and that is that many people view the word libertarian as synonymous with tolerance, that we are tolerant of other people, we are tolerant of other lifestyles, we are tolerant as long as your activities, which I may disagree with, I may not like, I may find unlovely, I might find disgusting, but as long as your activities don't violate the rights of your members, it's your business. And you should not face the big stick.
That's a really beautiful
vision. Again, we're right. Yet our ideas are just, in my opinion, better ideas. Society is based on the principles of liberty and responsibility. By any reasonable metric, our better society. And I think more and more people are starting to realize what those benefits are. That you can do what you will. You can run your life your way. Just don't violate your life rights. That's a truly beautiful vision. And it's also a vision, if I may say, it's a vision of love, because we're willing to say to our neighbors, we may not agree with you. We may not like you. But we're not going to run your life. You can run your life your way as long as you respect a certain basic sense. That's a beautiful thing.
Indeed. Thank you, Dr. Lark.
Are there any states in our region that have bucked the trend of contracting?
The question is, are there any states that have bucked the trend? None significantly. Virginia, my home state, has actually, we've lost about 100 members over the last, basically the last 7-8 months. And again, I'm not sure why that's the case. Is that because they don't like us any longer? Well, there's always been an attrition. Because there are a lot of people who will sign up with the Libertarian Party and they didn't realize that Libertarian stuff meant, oh yeah, that means we have to respect those rights over there. There are a lot of people who believe, yes, I want to keep my taxes, but I don't necessarily want those people to be able to use their recreational substance. Mm-hmm. Or, yes, I want to be able to engage in affectional matters with someone, but I don't necessarily want to let that guy keep his taxes. Sometimes people get involved in the Libertarian Party, including signing on the dotted line, and they're not, perhaps they didn't realize that liberty, it extends throughout human affairs. So right now, I don't know if anything in terms. I know North Carolina is making a big push to increase their party. They've got a. It's not a 5-year plan. It's a 2020 plan. They're looking at 2020. And J.J. Summerall and his people are doing, I think, a very good job of trying to build their party. I'm
afraid to call it a 5-year plan.
Yeah, that's why I generally don't like 5-year plans. No, it seems that there have been a few states nationally that have not seen drops, or at least not big ones. There have been a few that actually have increased, but they tended to be small states in the first place.
But is there any sign that they are doing something different that led to that?
Not that if they are doing something different. I my feeling ultimately is the best way to keep membership is make sure your members feel appreciated, that they feel that they're part of something important, that you're making progress. And that means that people in positions of leadership in the state party have to reach out and say thank you. Thank you for what you're doing. Make sure that people feel a welcome part of the team. And I don't know that we've done that as well as we should be doing in Virginia. I haven't done it as well as I should.
I'm going to pass on one comment. I think the fundraising letters from National have gotten to
by the way, one thing.
And after that, Lorenzo, I'd like to wrap this up because we do have to move on.
A comment. I have the honor of serving as your representative. Don't ever be bashful about not contacting me. If there's something you like, if there's something you don't like, you know, I'm there to represent your interests. And please, we need to know what you believe. If you feel that fundraisers, if we're not doing enough, if we're doing too many, if you don't like the tone, if you don't think we're doing something we ought to be doing, if we're doing something we shouldn't be doing, I'm your representative. Let me know. I'm perfectly happy to bring this to my colleagues, to the staff. Don't ever suffer in silence. My job is to represent you. Yes.
I really think we need to look through the states that are finding success by getting people registered rather than becoming a member. And how they can handle that. I think in Maryland we're in a pretty good position for that. I really think we are. And I do agree with Eric about the frequent speech. And I'm not alone.
Again,
my running mate and I have agreed on that.
Again, it is a great honor to participate with you. As I've mentioned before, I come to these events and I realize that I'm among heroes, people who are making a difference in the battle for liberty. Thank you for thank you for allowing me to participate again. Let me know what I can do to be of help. As I said before, consider me like a pack mule, strong back, weak mind. Let me know what I can do.
And thank you for coming out, Dr. Lawrence.